My name is Richard Hill. I'm a producer at WPKN in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and one of the producers of Between the Lines News Radio Magazine, which is the organizer of today's panel. Between the Lines, which is syndicated on more than 50 radio stations and produced by an all-volunteer staff, got its start during the first Persian Gulf War. The program provides a platform for individuals and spokespersons from progressive organizations generally ignored or marginalized by the corporate media. And I'd like to thank my colleague Scott Harris, who's in the front row here. He helped me organize the panel, and he's going to help with the technical support today as we record this panel for rebroadcast on Between the Lines, and I'm sure it'll be on Left Forum website as well. And of course, I think we have another media person from Maine, is it?
Yes.
Fantastic. Okay. What's your radio station? WERU. Excellent. Okay. Anyway, Scott is passing around a clipboard at some point where you can sign up for our BTL, Between the Lines mailing list, if you'd like to receive podcasts, program summaries, interview transcripts, etc. It's a great news site, and it would be really good to be in touch with everybody that's interested in that. So turning to today's panel, the remarkable grassroots labor movement that is the subject of today's panel may have just broken through to the mainstream media, if not the national political debate, but it has been a long time in the making, the result of decades of relentless assault on organized labor, the unleashing of globalization, the dismantlement of the country's industrial base, and the ever-intensifying grip of corporate power on every aspect of American political life. I'm sure I'm not the only one who has noticed a parallel between the present bleak economic landscape with its ever-expanding low-wage work sector and the pre- and early CIO 1930s, when dire economic conditions drove workers into the streets to launch sit-down strikes in their factories and to risk all for economic justice and dignity. And now today we see an upsurge of autonomous worker actions in the dark heart of the low-wage beast. Walmart, the fast food and restaurant industries, supermarkets and warehouses, among car washeros and taxi drivers, and many other sectors soon to come, no doubt. Our speakers today will explore the strategies and transformative potentials of this movement from multiple angles. Michael Zweig, a professor of economics at Stony Brook University and the director of the Center for the Study of Working Class Life, will assess the current state of organized labor and its future prospects going forward. Joseph Barrera, who is on his way up here, we hope, he's a KFC, a Kentucky Fried Chicken worker. He'll talk about the realities for fast food workers on the ground and the process that led up to the first fast food walkout starting last November. Catherine Ruchlin, a policy analyst for Demos, will discuss her research on the macroeconomic effects of raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour / $25,000 a year. And her game-changing article or paper, Retail's Hidden Potential, How Raising Wages Would Benefit Workers, the Industry, and the Economy, will be a critical piece in this discussion. Josh Idelson, himself a former union organizer in his errant youth and currently a journalist who has covered this movement extensively for The Nation, Salon.com, many other publications, I believe In These Times is also one of those, will present an overview of the alt-labor movement and report on the Walmart shareholders meeting, which he just attended in Alabama. Shanita Simon, are you with us, Shanita? Oh, hey, thank you. You made it. Fantastic. Is a KFC worker also, and she again will share her perspective, what it's like to be on the ground working for the bare minimum wage, and how she got involved in the first walkouts and what she believes the next steps will be for this movement. And finally, Amelia Adams, who is filling in for Bertha Lewis, who sadly has a serious knee injury and is in real pain and could not make it today, sadly. We wish her a speedy recovery. But Amelia Adams is the Deputy Director of New York Communities for Change, And she'll talk about the new political realities in the face of changing demographics, the influx of immigrant workers, and how that has changed the whole dynamics in the workplace and the possibilities for organizing workers in the low-wage sector. She'll also talk about the role of organized labor, the role that it has played in organizing these manifestations so far, and the role that it might play going forward. We're asking panelists to limit their presentations to 7 minutes to allow for a good chunk of time for discussion, not just with question and answers, but also between panelists, because I think this is kind of a cool coming together of people from academia, from journalism, from activism, and also from the actual work, lower wage work sector. And it might be a good time for people to actually have this kind of conversation amongst each other. So there certainly will be time for question and answer. At that point, maybe I'll alternate conversation between panelists with questions. So let's get started. Let's get our discussion started with Michael Zweig, who's professor of economics at Stony Brook University and director of the Center for the Study of Working Class Life. Michael.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's good to be here at the Left Forum again in 2013. The years keep rolling along, and here we are. 7 minutes, let me see what I can do, just sort of, as the Chinese say, going from mountaintop to mountaintop, peering down at the valleys below where all the interesting stuff is happening. So just some principal points of orientation to the discussion that I think are important. Number one, if we understand that a class structure of the society is something other than income, where we have the rich, middle, and poor, but understand class dynamics in terms of a capitalist class, a working class, and a middle class that's kind of in between those power grids of labor and capital, poverty emerges as something quite different from a group of people who are stuck at the bottom of society, the poor, who, as the Bible says, will always be with us, and there they are. I think that what's important for us to understand is that poverty is something that happens to the working class, and that it does not lend itself to the best analysis by thinking of the poor as some marginal other. That, I think, is the takeaway that I would want to contribute here. Poverty is something that happens to the working class, and if you're concerned about poverty, the concern should be directed towards improving the conditions of labor and improving the organizational capacity of working people to advance their own interests collectively, whether that's in the form of unions or politically or community organizations or in whatever way is available. That is where the action needs to be. I just have a few pieces of information that I want to throw into this. Coming out of the Bureau of Labor Statistics in 2011, if you look at the labor force as a whole, the working poor, that is the people who are poor but who are working at least 27 weeks a year, at least half time, are 7% of the labor force. 7% of the labor force in the United States are working poor. So that's a substantial number of people. Two-thirds of poor families had at least one person working for at least 27 weeks in the year. Two-thirds of all poor families. So what we're talking about here, again, is not some marginal other, but something that is the phenomenon of work, and particularly low-paid work, work that's interrupted by periods of unemployment, work that is very precarious, and that is reflected, again, the phenomenon of poverty and work, poverty in the working class, in what is sometimes called cycling, in and out of poverty. People tend sometimes to think, well, if you think of rich, middle, and poor, there's a broad middle class with a fringe of rich and a fringe of poor. And the poor, you know, it could be 12%, 14% of the population. It's more or less always the same rough number. And so that conveys the idea that those are the same people year after year. But it's not the same people. And when I wrote The Working Class Majority and looked into this in the late 90s, What I found was a Harvard study that demonstrated that over a 10-year period, 40% of the working population experienced poverty in at least 1 year. So again, people are poor, then they're not poor. They are laid off. They go through a divorce, and the woman finds herself in a precarious situation. And then in a year or two, the situation is recovered, and they're not poor anymore. So over a 10-year period, 40% of the labor force experiences poverty. That was an older study, and I did find a reference to a new study by Melissa Botich at the Center for American Progress, which demonstrated that recently, in four-year periods, in any four-year period, a third of the labor force experiences poverty in at least 1 year. So if we think of the labor force now in terms of class, capitalist class, a middle class, and a working class, what I found, and I'm not going to defend it here, but just to assert it, that about 63% of the labor force are working class people. The capitalists are about 2% in that power relationship. And then the middle class, about 35% of professional people, small business owners, and managers and supervisors. So it turns out that for the most part, poverty is going to be happening to people who are in that working class community. Some managers and some small business owners will experience poverty, and I'll get to that number in a moment. But if a third of the labor force experiences poverty within a four-year period, and two-thirds of the labor force is the working class, that means that roughly half the working class in this country experiences poverty within a four-year period. So when we're talking about poverty, we really need to understand that it is a central experience of working people in this country. So who is it who are poor? Well, of course, we know it's disproportionately Black, Hispanic, women. But I want to make a point here, again, of an important point of orientation. Poverty is disproportionately felt in the African-American community. About 25% poverty rate in the African-American community, about 8% poverty rate in the white community. So poverty is three times more prevalent in the Black community than it is in the white community. But two-thirds of all poor people in the United States are white. Three-quarters of all Black people in the United States are not poor. So often, if we just have poverty as just in terms of income, and we have the rich, middle, and poor, and you think of class that way, it's very easy to conflate poverty with race. And that's a big mistake. Even though it is true that poverty is disproportionately felt in the African-American community, and that's a serious problem of racism that we should not overlook, simply to leave it at that ignores the fact that two-thirds of all poor people in the United States are white. And if all your program and all your attention is paid to African-Americans when we talk about poverty, there's an awful lot of white people who are saying, wait a minute, what about me? And they have a point. So we really do need to keep that in mind. So who are these poor people? Again, from BLS data, Bureau of Labor Statistics, a third of all poor people, working poor, this is, are in service occupations. Only a third. I was really surprised when I saw that number. I expected it to be much higher than that. But about a third, about 23%, a little less than a quarter, are in sales and office professions. About 25% are in construction and other blue-collar work. And about 10 or 12% are in the management, professional, and related categories. So small business owners, some lawyers or doctors or nurses who are laid off and or who have difficulties. So there is some representation of poverty within the sort of managerial professional America, but that's about a third of the labor force, and it's only about 10% of the poor population. So it's much underrepresented, although it's not absent completely. So if we're looking again at the geographical spread of poverty, we need to understand that the demographics of the country are changing, and people are moving out of the well-to-do people, rich people, are moving out of the suburbs and into the cities. We know it here in New York is gentrification. It's going on all over the country. But what's happening is that poverty is being suburbanized. And we have this idea that the poor are only in the inner cities and the suburbs are where everybody is cool. That is not any longer really the case. So when we think about poverty in the suburbs, extra problems emerge because there's no transportation systems there. There's no easy access to medical facilities in the suburbs. There are no jobs. The mismatch of geographical location of jobs with where people live is a severe problem in this distribution of the poor. And I think that, again, just in 7 minutes to close off, to come back to the point that if we really want to understand poverty, we need to understand the conditions of work and of working people. And if we want to address the poor, as so many religious institutions do, including this Pope, who we have now, Pope Francis, who presents himself as someone with great concern for the poor. Terrific. Let's show that concern for the poor with concern for the working class. Let's show that concern for the poor for the transformational power of working people organized to address the institutions that structure the economy in such a way that poverty is reproduced from year to year, and that takes the characteristics that we see here. I'll finish with that, and we'll go on and see where the discussion leads us. Thank you very much.